See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us!
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I've got a death curse!
It was a shark.
Little pig, let's come in.
Mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And this week, Joe, we've got a special guest. It's Miss Allison Clay.
Hi.
Welcome aboard.
Major applause. And Allison.
There was great rejoicing.
Yeah, there was much rejoicing. Allison is an actor. She's a writer. She's a producer. She's done feature films, short films, television. She's performed in roughly 100 theatrical productions.
She's hosted all of the Golden Globes as well.
Maybe.
That's my main gig.
Yeah.
And, that's her day job.
Hosting the Golden Globes. Sorry, yeah. I just took a drink of water.
The job nobody seems to want anymore.
Yeah.
But we champion those that take it.
She studied film at New York Film Academy, NYU Tisch School of the Arts, Harvard University, and has a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Theater Performance. She graduated summa cum laude, Joe. She's way too smart for us.
I regret not dressing up or cleaning up.
I know. Yeah. I always regret that.
I feel underdressed.
Yeah. So... let's see. Allison.
So much more of an impressive resume than you and I put together.
I know. What the heck?
Why are we doing this?
Yeah, I know. Well, that's why we're doing this. So this is actually episode 119. So one more and we'll be at 120, Joe. I didn't think we'd ever get there.
Set of steak knives.
Yep. I didn't think we'd ever get there. So Allison. She's a coworker or not a coworker. She's a friend of a coworker of mine, a co-teacher. And, we kind of bounce back and forth talking about the fact that she's into film and she's into, and I think you do a podcast as well sometimes, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Our mutual friend and I host a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is it? Feel free to plug.
Yeah.
It's called Clearly Thriving. I like to say that it's basically just girl talk. Or bestie talk. We don't discriminate.
Sounds like Joe and me.
Yeah.
We talk about anything and everything.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Sometimes I make her watch scary movies. She's not really a horror fan, but sometimes I make her watch it and then I like to get her reaction.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. My other co-teacher, I've been getting her into horror movies a little bit. Like she hardly watched any at all. And I think she finally watched Scream. Last fall. And then I'm trying to get her, you know, we actually co-teach a horror class, horror literature class. And so she's planning, we're reading The Shining right now in the class, and she's planning to watch The Shining after we're done with the book. So,
That's very exciting.
But yeah,
the Kubrick version, right?
Yes, of course. Yes, okay. Yes, the Kubrick version.
As far as I'm concerned, it's the only version.
It is the only version, yes. Yeah. But Siri, on the other hand, who is my co-teacher, my phone just went off again. I say her name and my phone, like the Siri on my phone goes off every time.
Oh, I turned that off years ago.
Oh, did you? Yeah. No, it's impossible. But she's not into horror movies that much, but we'll get her there between Allison and me.
What's
She'll
funny
watch
is
it. It's just never her idea.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
When people are listening to this episode in their car, you're going to be
all the phones
tripping Siri all the time.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, stop it. Stop
Alexa,
listening.
Alexa, subscribe to the CineScare podcast.
Right.
There.
Right.
I'm not quite sure how to help you with that.
See? Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Allison, you should change your name to Alexa, actually. That would be really
great. My mom's name is actually Alexa, so I have Alexa and Siri.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
An Alexa and Siri podcast would be hilarious.
That would be pretty funny. Yeah. Siri and Alexa, everything you need to know between the two of them.
Honestly. Yeah. And I bet they would agree with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they have to.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Part of the algorithm.
Yeah. So Joe,
Matt,
what did you watch recently?
What didn't I watch? Well, all right. That list would probably be longer. I watched, let me scroll to the bottom of my notes here. Of course I watched The Rule of Jenny Penn on Shudder.
Yeah, I did too.
Which is just creepy as all get out. I have a newfound love for Lithgow.
Oh,
he's
great.
He's fantastic. Not that I ever fell out of love with him, but I now realize and I can appreciate even more just how creepy he can be. And I know in this particular film, which of course is about Jeffrey Rush, who is a judge who has some sort of stroke or attack or something while sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
To the point where he's permanently removed from his position and put into a retirement home that's also inhabited by plenty of other people, one of which is John Lithgow, who plays a character named Dave Creeley. And they are at odds with each other for basically unknown reasons. And I understand we're supposed to feel bad, I guess, for Jeffrey Rush in this particular film.
Yeah.
But he's kind of a dick through most of it. He doesn't want to make friends. He doesn't want to give in to any. He's just as brainwashed as every other person in that place, thinking that today's their last day in here and tomorrow they're getting out, which we all pretty much know is not true. But it was a stunning watch. I was very thrilled. I didn't think I was going to like it, but I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, I liked
it
too.
And that's on Shudder. Yeah.
Yeah, it is on Shudder. Yeah. I don't even think it had really a theatrical release. Not that I don't remember seeing it come around here. So, but it is. It's very creepy. And John Lithgow is fantastic. Of course, he's played bad guys before. In Dexter, he played a serial killer. And he was really creepy in that. And so he takes that, only ramps it up a notch, I guess, if that's possible. Because I guess he does kill people. But it's more the persecution he does on these old people. And then, of course, just the environment is scary because you have all these people who have dementia and whatever. And so our inclination is to not believe them when they claim that somebody's doing something to them. And so they're not believed. So basically it's a culture of everyone just being afraid of this guy. And it's really, really good. It's very effective. I enjoyed that one a lot. I mean, if it's possible to enjoy that, it was hard to watch sometimes. It was very, very intense, but just a fantastic movie and great performances. And it's so nice to see like old people in movies. You know, you just don't see elderly actors getting this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? They might play the grandpa or an old judge or, you know, whatever, but you don't see them getting to play in a horror movie like this, where it's really 90% of the cast is old. Like they're all elderly. And so it's just, it was a nice breath of fresh air that I didn't realize I wanted, you know. It was really great.
I think the last thing that I remember watching John Lithgow in was playing Will Ferrell's dad in Daddy's Home 2. Oh, and it's such a terrible movie. And he was so embarrassing in that film. It's just it's like, what a waste of talent. So I'm glad, I agree with you. I'm glad he got something like this to stretch out a little bit more in. So.
Although the thermostat scene in that movie was pretty funny, but I thought. Anything else, Joe?
Plenty more. I'm not done. I started watching The Bondsman, the new series on Amazon Prime with Kevin Bacon. This basically is the story of Kevin Bacon, who plays a character by the name of Hub Halloran. He is a bail bondsman in real life, goes out to try to find somebody, and in the midst of it ends up being killed. But of course, the devil wasn't done with him yet, so now he's fated to walk the earth for the rest of his life, hunting demons on behalf of the devil for him. And that sounds great, but it's a terrible series. I don't recommend it. Each episode is maybe a half an hour long. I think there's 8 episodes in the first season. It's a struggle for me to get through episode 6. And I think being the completist that I am, this should mean a lot. I don't think I can watch 7 and 8. There's this whole other story with his ex-wife and their son, and she's trying to start back at her music career, and I could really care less, but there's just too much screen time focused on that. It's a wasted storyline. I don't see anything good with this one. I would avoid this one like the plague. Don't waste your time. So, on top of that, non-horror related, I've watched with most of the rest of the country, the finale of White Lotus. I think Severance, we haven't recorded since Severance was done.
Right.
That's all wrapped up. Invincible on Amazon Prime. Have you ever watched that?
No, I can't get into animated shows. I just can't.
I know my son is really into it, and I started.
And Michelle, I think, has been trying to watch it because he really loves it. And I've watched a little, and I just can't stay interested.
I usually find myself struggling to get back into it when the new season comes in, but after, because like my son's a huge fan of it too. Basically, by about episode 2. Maybe at the end of 1, I'm reminded why I liked it in the first place. There's so much blood and gore and violence in this. It's like worse than any horror movie. And some of the people that do the voiceovers for this, there's from The Walking Dead, the guy that plays Glenn does the voice for the main character. And in this season, we're also introduced to Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who played Negan. He's doing a voice for a different character, and there's some conflict there, and it doesn't end well for one of them. I really liked it.
My only connection to this is that I've had several students tell me I look like Omni-Man because of my hair and if I had a mustache, if I shaved the beard, but
yeah, I could see that.
And the gray on the
sides. You got to get a lot more buff.
Well, yes, 100%. Yeah. But yeah. I think they were talking about my head.
Don't we all? Yeah. That, and I'm still watching The Pit with Noel Wiley. It's still really good. There's one episode left. It's a fantastic show. I highly recommend it.
Is that it?
Yeah, unless you want me to make that plug now that I asked you about it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I was asked to plug something that's going on in the Quad Cities in May 8th, I believe. Yes. There's an event coming to the Capitol Theater, downtown Davenport, called Fritzy to Fulci 2005, the Zombie Composer's Cut. So the movie Zombie from 1979, there will be a showing of that with a live band playing the music along with it. Like,
oh, cool.
I've seen things like this done with like Disney films and Harry Potter, but I've never seen it done with, you know, a horror film.
What's the band? And is it the original band that did the music?
No, there was an orchestra, I believe, that did the music. I don't know, some ragtag group of guys that all decided this is what they want to do. But it's been touring since like 2022, I believe. But yeah, it looks quite interesting. And again, that's Thursday, May 8th, 8 o'clock, Capitol Theater, Davenport, Iowa. Get your tickets at capitaltheater.com. And I hope everybody goes. I want to check this out. This looks like it'd be fun.
Yeah, if you're in the Iowa Quad City bi-state area of Iowa and Illinois, go for it. Wish I was closer. I'd love to check that out. Maybe they'll be around here. Maybe they'll come out to California.
They do tour around. So,
by the way, Allison and I are practically neighbors. She lives like 2 blocks from me.
Yes, that's what I've heard.
Yeah. So
I hear you're on the really cool Halloween block.
I am. Yes. Yes.
I'm really jealous of that.
Lucky son of a bitch. So am I. Yeah. So,
yeah. Well, Joe is the Halloween block in his neighborhood.
House. I represent Halloween for most of the entire Quad Cities.
Yeah.
So there's only like 6 people that do decor. I'm one of 6.
Yeah. Our street is insane. And this last year, the number of, well, we had I think I mentioned before, we had, there were some influencers that came here and took a bunch of pictures in our house and our neighbors' houses and stuff, and did videos up and down our street. And so this Halloween was particularly busy. Like we gave out, I don't remember how many pieces of candy, but it was a lot. And we got, and we were done well, like by 8:30. So there were people, we turned people away most of the night. And we spent, I mean, we spend a couple $100 in candy every Halloween. So
yeah,
it's crazy. That is crazy. Is that it, Joe? Anything else?
That's it. Yeah, I'm all right. Tapped out.
Allison, have you anything recent that you've watched, or you know, you haven't been on the show before? So, anything you want to mention that you've seen that was recent-ish?
I finally watched The Substance last night.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was warned by everyone that it was gross. Mm-hmm. There were a couple times that I literally out loud went, "Ew."
Yeah,
and I'm not averse to gore, but I think. We can give spoilers, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, by now, yeah. Well, yeah. What do you think? Like, Joe's giving
it was,
a look.
It was so last year. Yeah, spoil okay, it. Fine, I don't fine. Care.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when somebody bursts out of your spine, I think that's worth an ew.
Yeah.
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 But that's a minor really spoiler.
It was justified, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
it was good. I liked it. I don't know that I'll ever watch it again, but I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah.
I'm watching Yellow Jackets. Do you guys watch Yellow Jackets?
Yes. Yeah, I was gonna. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know if that really counts as horror, but it's definitely.
Yeah, it's in the
realm. Enough. It counts enough.
Yeah.
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 And that's pretty much all I've watched lately for horror. Oh, I watched The Watchers.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I haven't. I haven't seen that one yet. Is it any good?
I really liked it.
Yeah.
It has Dakota Fanning. And other people, obviously, but I really liked it. I thought it was creative for that kind of.
Oh, is this the M. Night Shyamalan's Daughters movie?
I think so, yeah.
Oh.
You and I will disagree on this one. I was not a fan.
Okay, that's fine. I'm not a fan of most of his stuff, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I did like this one. I thought it was more creative than I expected it to be. So that was fun.
What did you watch that on?
I think I rented it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, to get the TV shows out of the way. Yeah, I agree. I finished Severance, and that was great. I thought this season was really good. Yellow Jackets. I've been watching that as well. I think, was this their last episode of the season, or is there one more?
I feel like there's one more.
Yeah, I think there's one more. And that one, this season I feel has been kind of up and down a little bit. I don't feel like, and I don't know if you get this feeling too. Joe, have you been watching Yellow Jackets or no?
No, I have not.
Oh. This season I feel like no one is particularly likable. And like everybody seems to be kind of an asshole. Like there's it kind of, and then it just feels like every episode has to have one big cliffhanger thing happen, and I don't know, it's definitely, I'll stick with it and keep watching it, but this season I didn't feel was as strong as the first couple seasons. So
no, I agree.
Yeah. And then White Lotus, that was good. It's not really horror, but I thought it was a pretty good season. It was definitely a different season, and I liked the last episode.
Oh, I thought it was kind of a letdown.
The last episode or the whole season?
Yes. Just the last episode.
Oh, I actually liked the last episode, you know, the most of a lot of the season. Mm-hmm. Like some of the episodes just felt like they were kind of killing time a little bit, but I liked this season or the last episode. There was one thing I wish had happened, but we could talk about that later. Adolescence, I did watch that. I think you talked about it last time, and that made me want to watch it. So that was fantastic. Really, really good. Really good. That's on Netflix. And it's I don't know if they're going to have another season of that or not, but man, that was powerful stuff. And of course, The Rule of Jenny Penn, loved that movie as well. And we watched Cannibal Mukbang. We rented that, I think. Yeah. And this is this guy, it's kind of an indie love story, cannibal horror. And, basically this girl, this guy meets this girl, and it turns out she's a cannibal, and it's almost not really like a vampire, but the problem is she ate part of a person once, and then kind of it like makes you, it's almost like it changes you and you have to keep eating people. So the two of them, you know, basically sort of in a Dexter way, they look for terrible people and kill them and then eat them. And it was okay. It was definitely indie, and there were, you know, could see some things that were kind of just sort of a little amateurish, I guess is the word for it, maybe. But the main girl, her name was April. The actress is named April Consalo. She was really good. I think the main guy, her love interest, was a little, I don't know, lukewarm. He wasn't great. But I thought it's definitely worth checking out. It was entertaining. I don't think I gave it any stars because I just put that I liked it on Letterboxd, but it's worth checking out especially if you're into cannibal horror. And then
who isn't?
And then finally we went out to the movies, last weekend for the first time in a while, and we saw Hell of a Summer, which is the movie directed by Finn Wolfhard, who was one of the kids from Stranger Things, and Billy Brick, I guess, is his writing and directing partner. And I give it three cuts. It's okay. It's a summer camp horror movie. I thought the humor was kind of on the nose, you know, and it was a little obvious on some things, and the characters were very much like stereotypical caricatures, but it didn't lean into the satire or parody enough for it to be kind of a spoof. So it was sort of an in-between kind of thing. And then the kills, there were a couple okay kills, but most of the kills they cut before the kill happened. So it wasn't that exciting, you know, and the setup to the kills were just kind of meh, not really a whole lot of jump scares either. So I think it's one to wait for when it comes out on DVD or on DVD on when it comes to streaming. It's worth checking out when it comes to streaming. I think it is kind of fun, but it wasn't great. It wasn't as good as I was hoping it would be. And I have a feeling the only reason it got distribution is because that Stranger Things kid is in it. You know, if it had been anyone else, it probably would have, I don't know that it would have, but I think it did okay in film festivals, so who knows. It's definitely worth checking out when it comes to streaming, though. I don't think it's one you need to rush out and see. And I think, let me double check my list, because I feel like there's something I'm missing, but I maybe not.
Didn't you watch that like Hatchet movie that's on Shudder?
Hatchet?
It's like Bloody Axe Wound or something.
No, that was one I talked about doing, and we just haven't gotten around to it. I've been reading some kind of mixed reviews, so it hasn't been one that I've been dying to jump on, you know. But yeah. So
before we get off of this, a couple things I thought of. First of which, by the time this comes out, the night before, which now on Tuesday, in a couple of days, Thursday, I believe, is when Black Mirror comes back on.
Oh.
And also this coming Sunday is when The Last of Us comes back to HBO.
Oh, this Sunday?
So, finally. Yeah. So mark your calendars. Yeah, it kind of took the place of White Lotus.
Oh.
And speaking of horror video games, in case anybody's interested, yes, I did finally finish Resident Evil 7.
Did you? And how was it?
It's fucking awesome. That last kill, the last big boss thing. Oh, scary as hell. Loved it. I need to get number 8. Yeah.
Nice. And you played that on what?
Xbox X, I think. I don't know. Whatever my son.
Yeah.
I was left with like an old gaming system. He took the good one off to college. So
I see. Whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Whatever we had laying around.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, what do we have? Let's see.
Stop.
What?
Hammer time.
Oh, yes. It is hammer time. Actually, I jumped the gun. I do want to say this last weekend, iconic horror bookstore, Dark Delicacies, closed its doors for the final time. And I went there. I bought a Dark Delicacies t-shirt. And the guy who owns the place, Del House, and he also writes books. And so I bought his latest anthology called... something what fresh hell is this or something like that. And so I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I went in, talked to them, and they had me, because I had done a couple book signings there, and so they had me sign a poster along with a bunch of other authors, and so I just, you know, wanted to, you know, give a shout out to Dell, because that they are just absolutely an icon of horror all over the place. And I just saw that he is being given a Lifetime Achievement Award by the Stoker Awards, which is a big horror, wow, horror literature award ceremony in, I think they do it in Salem, Massachusetts, or maybe they move around. I'm not sure. But so he's being given a Lifetime Achievement Award along with, I think, Clive Barker and somebody else. So he and Clive Barker are friends. But anyway, I it was a dream come true for me to have a book signing there, and I got to meet a lot of people through him and through them. And so it's sad to see them go, but he is going to remain. He's going to keep his Dark Dell. I think it's darkdell.com. He has a website where they will continue to sell merchandise and books. And he said that he will, he and his wife will still be going to all the major horror conventions and have booths at those, and he'll sell books and other things there as well. So good luck to him. And I mean, obviously he was retirement age, so it's a retirement well earned, but it's sad for those of us who loved going there. And here in Burbank, we have a whole horror genre of stores, from Halloween Town and what's this one, Camp Horror, and Mystic Museum. And Dark Delicacies was really one of the first on that row of horror stores. So he'll be sorely missed. And I hope somebody comes to pick up the slack on that, because it was an absolute staple. I know a lot of people had offered to buy the name Dark Delicacies and keep the store going, but he wanted to keep the name for himself and for his website and for his pop-up shops. So. All right. So I guess that does bring us to Hammer Time, which is, we did some Hammer Horror, which is, it's kind of surprising. This is episode 119, and I don't think we've done a single Hammer Horror movie in all of our history of all of the picks we had. So it's something that I had thought of doing numerous times, but then I just chose to do something else. But I figure it's time. And I had fun with these. So let's start off with the sleaziest one of all of them.
Wait, can I guess which one of the three is the sleaziest?
It's interesting, because Hammer used to be a little more, I mean, they always had heaving bosoms, you know, or whatever, but not naked breasts. And back in the 50s, and with the other two movies that we had, and they were always kind of known for a little titillation. But Vampire Lovers marked the point when nudity was coming back to horror movies, because of the rating system, or not just horror movies, but movies in general. And so from then on, they kind of became Hammer movies, even though they're super fun, a lot of them in the 70s, they kind of became a parody of themselves a little bit. And this was kind of not necessarily the beginning of it, but part of the beginning of that trend of Hammer horror. And even, you know, it's not a terrible movie, or it's not like there's nothing to latch onto here. So
there's plenty of boobs to latch onto. That's a lot of about boobs it.
The Vampire Lovers, wow, from 1970, directed by Roy Ward Baker, an erotic nightmare of tormented lusts that throb in headless undead bodies. That's the tagline, Joe. In the heart of Styria, the Karnstein family, even after their mortal deaths, rise from their tombs, spreading evil in the countryside in their lust for fresh blood.
They're spreading more than evil.
Yeah. Baron Hartog, whose family are all victims of Karnstein vampirism, opens their graves and drives a stake through their diabolical hearts. One grave he cannot locate is that of the legendary, beautiful Mircalla Karnstein, or whatever. Years of peace follow that grisly night until Mircalla reappears to avenge her family's decimation and desire, and satisfy her desire for blood. She has more than a desire for blood, I'm thinking, too. So this one stars Ingrid Pitt, Peter Cushing, George Cole, Kate O'Mara, a bunch of other people that I don't know. But, of course, Peter Cushing was in a lot of these Hammer horror films. In fact, he's in all three of the Hammer horror films that we watched.
Yeah, we could have just done a Peter Cushing fest.
Yeah.
And it would have been the same three movies.
One. Yeah. Yeah. The only one we're missing is Christopher Lee in this one, but it was maybe beneath him. No, he did some really sleazy Hammer movies after this. But let's start with you, Joe. What are your thoughts on The Vampire Lovers?
I think this movie is more just a softcore porn film, bookended by some sort of horror storyline, kind of like a loose. This is
I don't know. I'd go that far, because it's not like you showed much other than just disrobing.
It's,
mostly.
It's just that's not true. There's quite a lot of love scenes, or at least.
Well, I know, but they're kind of. It's more. Yeah. They're like, you know. I don't know.
But they're brought on so easily. It's like even easier of a setup than you know, the pizza delivery guy with the pizza, with the extra sausage, and we don't have the money to pay. What do we do?
Yeah.
You know, this is like, this is an actual example from this Marcilla, which in the film, it's weird. They refer to her as Marcilla and also Carmilla.
Yeah.
Not a lot of continuity in this film, but she
changed her name, Joe.
She hands this maid or woman of the house or something a brooch. And her biggest compliment is on how sharp the pins are. But the minute she puts that on, she like instant lesbian love scene, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's a powerful
superpowers.
Powerful brooch.
It's hard to appreciate this film with all of the objectification of women, even right off of the bat. There's the scene in the pub early on where they hear a scream outside the door, and the pub is just filled with guys. Who answers the door? The barmaid. She's the only one with balls enough to go figure out what that scream was on the outside of the pub door.
Yeah, she's tough.
She was a lot more than the guys in there. I also think that if is decapitation for vampires, has that always been a thing? Not just
the stake through the heart. Yeah, I think in the original, in the book Dracula, I think you were supposed to stake them through the heart and separate their head.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm a big fan of both. I just, that one seemed a little off. I love the modern medical history that goes on in this film as well, when the doctors recommend if anybody gets sick, red meat and greens will pretty much fix anything in this film.
That is a good one. I think the doctor must have been Ron Swanson.
Yes. There's no way Ron Swanson would have prescribed greens. It just would have been red meat.
That's true,
And this is way toward, I'm skipping around a bit, but at the very end when they go to finally kill her, like the suspense, the buildup for it took so long. Like they could have announced who the next American Idol was before they actually killed the vampire in this film. It's funny too. So if you'll allow me, I need to read or at least paraphrase this little bit of trivia. They were asking Ingrid Pitt about the extensive nudity in this film and if she was reluctant. But it was, Roy Ward Baker, the director, he decided when they were going to have that big lesbian love scene that it was going to be a closed set.
Mm-hmm.
And the producers of the film were like all pissed off about this because they figured they were like, hey, I put my money down for this film. I should get to see this.
Right.
And they couldn't. And so because they were so bent out of shape, Ingrid Pitt, she was walking to her scene.
Yeah.
And from her trailer, and she just had on a robe with nothing underneath it. As these producers were walking away, all ticked off. So she stopped them and flashed them, opened up her robe.
Yeah.
So they get an eyeful, and then she kept going. And then I guess they were fine from that. So,
yeah.
I will say this though, and this is I will say this for all three of these Hammer movies that we watched. The score is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These guys really knew how to build tension and set mood and make a scene with your ears. It was spectacular.
Yeah.
This is the type of music that I used to remember listening to with these old movies when I was a kid growing up. And you don't find musical scores like this to film any longer.
Yeah.
So I was thrilled even watching this film, quote unquote, just because of the musical score for it. It was, I loved that part. So
yeah,
I got something nice to say about everything.
Good.
Even this.
Allison, what are your thoughts on The Vampire Lovers?
This was definitely my least favorite of the three. Siri asked me what I thought about the movies, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to talk about this with your coworker. I also love a good decapitation scene. This was probably the cleanest decapitations I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
It's literally like one swift thwack and then the head literally just like flies off. I thought that was hilarious.
For the time, the head didn't look too bad either, as I recall.
I mean, true.
Yeah.
It looked okay. Just the sound effect, which I learned that they got that sound effect from like chopping a cabbage.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So then by the time the second one came around and I had already Googled that, it made it even funnier.
Yeah.
So that was fun. I agree with you about the score. That was probably my favorite part as well. I also did read, because I'm one where I have to be reading like the trivia as I'm watching the movie. I did read that Madeline Smith, who played Emma, that was her first big like movie, and so she didn't really know what she was getting into, and she didn't know there was going to be any nudity in it at all.
Yeah.
Oops.
And she was like barely 19. I felt so bad for her.
Yeah.
But she got paid, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. What else? Anything else?
I mean, I honestly liked it more than I expected I would.
Yeah.
But not my personal cup of tea.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't like some of the movies we watch. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to turn this off. And I didn't like mind watching it. It was like there was this kind of a story to it. And yeah, there was, you know, I mean, it was definitely an exploitation film for sure. But you know, kind of it was there was a campiness to it that I didn't mind.
For sure. Very 70s of them.
Yeah. When they went into the camera, I did notice that at least three of the extras looked right into the camera, like right down the barrel of the camera. The old crucifix on the boob. You know, if she was just a little smaller, that wouldn't have been a problem. But at the beginning, the guy, it was the first vampire that goes after the guy. She's like seducing him. And then when they hug, his cross hits her in the boob, and that's what caused him to realize like it broke the spell or whatever. And then the doctor comes in to listen to her heart, but he just like listens to her breast, I think is what he was doing. Like some doctor. I'm still a little unclear on who the guy was on the horse that was just always, they kept cutting to him every time she would seduce someone. Then they would cut to him sitting out in the woods. He was, I guess, one of the family. I still don't know if I remember what he was. Do you remember, Joe?
I assumed it was some sort of like head vampire or something.
Yeah, I thought so, but we never really,
because they kept going town to town pulling that same con. Like, can you have my niece or daughter, whatever it was? I got my husband sick, so It was just a way to get them indoors.
But it seemed he wasn't benefiting from it. You know, it would have been one thing if she had seduced these people and then he came in and drank their blood too. But he just stayed outside. It was like he was just happy she was feeding. I don't know.
Yeah.
The Renton guy died really quickly. Like it seemed like he died very fast. And some of there was inconsistency between the characters. Some characters would last for days with her draining their blood, and then others would be dead in like 2 seconds. I have noticed that no one faints in movies anymore. When was the last time you saw anyone faint in a movie? Back in these days, I think it was just a ploy to like move on to the next scene or get someone out of the way. And it was always a woman, obviously, that they did this to. But you just don't see fainting anymore. It's sort of like quicksand.
It's a lost art.
Yeah. And I did say it was a pretty good fake head. So this one overall, if you're obviously if you're a Hammer horror completist, you've got to watch this. And it has quite a, well, I don't know if I'd say it's a huge cult following, but I like the look of these movies too. And have you seen the poster for this? It's one of those old drawn posters or whatever. Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah, I love it.
It's great artwork.
Yeah. Great artwork.
Classic, yeah.
Okay. Oh, and also the other thing is I felt like the daughter, well, she's a vampire, but I mean, if she's a vampire at a certain age, and she's supposed to be kind of a teenager or whatever, like these, or young 20s, like these other girls, she looked like she was as old as her own mom. You know, it didn't really make sense to me. But anyway, moving on, we can move on to the next one. And that is The Hound of the Baskervilles from 1959, directed by Terence Fisher. And this one, of course, is starring Peter Cushing, Andre Morel, as Watson. Peter Cushing plays Sherlock Holmes, Christopher Lee, Marla Landy, a bunch of others. When a nobleman is threatened by a family curse on his newly inherited estate, Detective Sherlock Holmes is hired to investigate. And this is The Hound of the Baskervilles has been remade numerous times over the years, a lot of TV versions of it. The original that I saw, anyway, I don't know if it was the actual original, was with Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce, and I always liked that one quite a bit. And all those old Sherlock Holmes movies I like a lot. But this one, The Hound of the Baskervilles, I thought it was pretty good and looks good. I like the sets and everything. Again, the music, the score was great. And I think Peter Cushing is a terrific Sherlock Holmes. So, Allison, why don't you start us off with The Hound of the Baskervilles?
This one I actually really liked. I'd never seen it before. Also was very excited that the hound was not killed by a hammer. This is also the first one I watched of the three. So I was very pleased that the puppy, although the puppy dies, you know, it wasn't like, didn't hurt me too much. loved the scenery for this one. I also learned that the Dracula castle that we'll talk about in a little bit is this set redressed.
Right. Yep.
Which I love when they did that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I also loved like the scene where she's running through the woods barefoot. It's like they've built the woods inside a soundstage. And I love when I'm watching older movies and I can tell that it's a soundstage because we don't really do that now.
I like that too. And there's something it's, you know, I think a lot of people now, if we did it, would say that's kind of fakey, but it's its own world, you know, it's kind of, yeah. And I really like that too. It's almost gives it, I don't know, like a theatrical sense, you know, but it works.
Helps you appreciate the craft of them making that to try to make it look as realistic as possible.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah, totally.
But yeah. I thought it was beautifully done. I love, like when I first started playing it and the really old MGM Lion came on, mm-hmm. I knew I was in for a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's so nostalgic. That's what I grew up with. So I was like, yes.
And the font of the opening of all the credits and everything. I just love the fonts of these old credits. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Anytime there's like a full credit before the first line. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm there for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that too. Joe, what did you think of Hound of the Baskervilles?
I do want to say that out of the three movies we watched, probably my least favorite poster of the three. I
think
the Hound looks kind of goofy.
Yeah,
I'm not a huge fan of it.
Yeah, it's terrible.
But I am a big fan of the story. I remember reading this, but this was like my first like big boy book. Like, I'm going to read Hound of the Baskervilles. Mm-hmm. And I read it at a very early age and remembered like none of it. But I think this story, and this is more about the storyline than the movie, but I've always considered it to be like the first Scooby-Doo mystery. I don't really think it's a horror film. There's no horror elements in it, right, but it always seemed more like a mystery. And, you know, the Scooby and the gang of kids are going to find out who does it. But there's a twist at the end. It's the, you know, with the dog pulling the mask, or they pull the mask off the dog. That's, I think, what always made me think about Scooby-Doo when I saw this. So,
yeah.
The score, again, absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. The medical advice still has not changed. Again, when you're sick, nothing like a shot of whiskey in a cold winter's night that will make you feel better. And again, with the continuity, there were two instances where someone left the castle and it was pitch black out, and then you see them 2 minutes later and it's like dusk, and then the very when they arrive at their destination, again, it's pitch black. And that happened twice,
yeah,
actually, throughout the film. But I think Peter Cushing, I couldn't agree more. Like, he's who I would think of as Sherlock Holmes. I think that's mm-hmm. perfectly cast.
Yeah.
I think he was fantastic at it. The only other character that I really want to point out was the bishop, played by Miles Mailson. He's so annoying. Oh. He just would not shut up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, you know, we all know you're just here to get drunk like every other Irish priest in town, but just get on with it, you know? So, but,
I thought he was pretty like funny though.
Yeah. It was grating on my nerves after a while, but, cause he just would not let up. Anyway, it was good. I liked it. This is my second favorite of the three.
Yeah. I think it looks beautiful. I actually wrote the drunk bishop is wonderful. And then, you know, you get the old things that used to scare people back in those days. Tarantula is one. And,
yeah.
And anytime there was a scary spider, it was always a tarantula in these old movies, because tarantulas look like the scariest spider, even though they're not as dangerous as some others. And then quicksand. And we had both in this. Although, I mean, yeah. I don't know if they called it quicksand, but it was basically the same concept, I think. Was it Watson fell?
The bog or the moors?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Watson that fell in at first. And he was warned, too. He should have known better.
Yeah, no kidding. He chased that girl.
No, yeah. She should have known better. She's the one who's supposed to know the moors.
Yeah, yeah.
And who goes out running barefoot, too?
Yeah.
You know, no, she deserved that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe she just has like leather feet at this point, so she's just unfazed.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she's running around barefoot. Yeah. I had cousins who did that. Like, they walked around barefoot all the time across gravel. And I was always like, how do you do that? And they would. They would. And I'm like, I don't understand how you can do that. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. And when I was a kid, I was really into Sherlock Holmes. And on PBS, there was on Saturday evenings when I was really young, there was a show from England called, I think it was like Sherlock Holmes Theater or something like that. And they would play all kinds of old Sherlock Holmes movies. And but I had never seen this one before now. So I'm really glad I got a chance to check it out. And I thought this was really quite fantastic. And of course, yes, the sets are the same as the ones that they used in Dracula, because they were really shot around the same time. I think Dracula was shot maybe just 6 months before Hound of the Baskervilles was. So, okay. Which brings us to Dracula, 1958, directed by Terence Fisher. Actually, I think Hound of the Baskervilles was Terence Fisher too. Yeah. And so Dracula, directed by Terence Fisher, starring Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, and a bunch of others. After Jonathan Harker attacks Dracula At his castle, the vampire travels to a nearby city where he preys on the family of Harker's fiance. The only one who may be able to protect them is Dr. Van Helsing, Harker's friend and fellow student of vampires, who is determined to destroy Dracula, whatever the cost. So this one, again, yes, it was, came out in 1958. I thought, they tried too hard to hide the fact that Harker in this one was actually there to kill Dracula. And he had an interaction with a girl in the castle who was asking him to save her. And he basically treats her like she's out of her mind. And then the next scene, he reveals that he's actually, through his diary or something, he reveals that he's actually there to kill Dracula because he's a vampire. And I'm like, you could have saved this poor girl, but you're biding your time so you can get revenge. Like, it was a horrible thing to do. And I also found that there were a couple scenes where it seemed like they went to kill Dracula right before sundown. I'd probably try to do that right after sun up, like why you have all day? What have you been doing all day? What have you done all day that kept you from being able to kill Dracula until right when the sun goes down? I didn't understand that. And then when he had an opportunity to kill Dracula, he stakes the girl first. Like, Dracula's the one he wants, why does he stake the girl vampire first? It didn't, that was, obviously the reason, because there would not have been a movie then after that, but
that's amazing. Beside the point. I have the exact same note.
Yeah.
If he hadn't wussed out and tried to kill the woman first, this would all have been over in like 10 minutes.
And then there was a bit of continuity, a major, major continuity error. The casket that Dracula steals to use has a crucifix on it. Come on.
That's, yeah.
Hammer.
Hogan.
Hogan. Hammer. Joe.
Yes.
What did you think of Dracula?
Okay. What I love about this film is, first off, the poster's wonderful. Yeah. I'm really curious how they made this print, if they do a photograph and then literally paint over it or make prints around it, because the Christopher Lee shot on the front is just fantastic. Somebody painted that. That's tremendous. But what I appreciate the most is the fonts that they used. The topography is just spectacular. Mm-hmm. I love the color palette too. Right. Anyway, if you are watching this film, and in the first, wait,
hold on, Joe. When you say the poster, do you mean the one that says Horror of Dracula, or the one that just says Dracula?
It says Sensational Shock and Thrill Show, Peter Cushing, the All New Dracula.
Oh, let me look.
It's the one that's on the IMDb page.
Oh, let me look. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, although I see what you're talking about. There's another one where he's carrying the woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's amazing, but I don't know that was the movie poster.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that one's cool too. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, also very well done. Anyway, if you're watching this film and you forget within the first 30 seconds, what am I watching? They do a nice job of reminding you, because there's the slowest pan into this stone block that says Dracula on it. And it takes like 30 minutes to finally get into focus and begin.
Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you for that reminder. This castle, Dracula's castle, is exactly what I think Dracula's castle looks like on the inside. Yeah.
100%.
When we went back and watched that 1931 or whatever it was, the original one, the castle seemed like it was in ruins. Right. That was odd for me. That's not what I remember. Not what I pictured Dracula's castle to be. So, and I, like you, had the same note. If a very busty woman in a plunging neckline comes up to me and says, "Please help me, I'm being held prisoner," your answer should not be, "I don't understand."
I know.
That was like the dumbest response you could come up with.
Well, and it would make more sense if what came after wasn't the fact that he was there to kill a vampire.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody else saw this or not, but when Mr. Harker gets taken to his room, if you look at the front of the, like right at the foot of the bed, there was a chest sitting there. Did you notice that at all?
In which one?
In Harker's bedroom. When Dracula finally takes him upstairs that first night to his bedroom.
Yeah. And, no, I didn't notice the chest. No.
Okay. There's a chest at the foot of the bed. I swear to God, looks exactly like the Ark of the Covenant.
Oh, like, really?
It's just missing the handles and yeah. And like the wings on top. But other than that, it's just, that's all I could think of in that entire scene.
Check it out.
Again, the music in this is absolutely spectacular. The full orchestra really accentuates what you're seeing on screen. The fight scenes in this, in these films are goofy. Yeah. Nobody throws a punch. It's all just, I'm going to grab you and I'm going to pull and tussle back and forth until somebody falls down.
Nobody... But what about Peter Cushing's parkour scene? Like he had a whole
I've got that scene. In there. Yeah. This is the invention of parkour. Because yeah, 100%. He cannot walk up a flight of stairs. He's got to jump over a banister.
Yeah.
And down. Oh my God. It was amazing. Yeah. I have. Did you read
about
that?
Did you read about him doing that? It was his idea to jump over the banister like that. And the producers were very much against it because of liability issues, but he went ahead. He did it anyway, but it was like a whole parkour. It wasn't just jumping over banister. Like he was parkour. Like he could have been yelling that.
Yeah, the fight scenes are pretty funny. Killing vampires in these films, it all seemed like a very gentlemanly thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, like you had to be educated, sophisticated, maybe gone to school for a couple of years. They wouldn't let the common folks do this.
Yeah.
It's like you got to be somebody. You have to have some sort of lineage before they'll allow you to kill a vampire. I did think it was hilarious, that stupid joke that they threw in. The guy that is... running that little I don't even know what you call it, where there's the arm that goes down like a gate, and so you won't drive through, you know.
Yeah,
but then this horse and carriage comes and busts it in half, and it was like a Three Stooges bit.
Yeah,
so anyway, that I was fine with that. I've got Peter Cushing and all of his parkour.
You know what I like about these old movie, all of these old vampire movies as well, is that the vampires aren't overpowered. You know, like nowadays we have vampires always have to have like super strength. I mean, you get the sense that Dracula is more powerful than the average human, but not to the point of having like strength that doesn't make sense, you know?
Yeah, and, be able to throw somebody across a room.
Right, exactly.
With his bare hands.
Yeah, or run so fast that he's there in 2 seconds, you know? Because it kind of makes those movies not make sense. Like, how could the vampire not always win if they have that much strength? Whereas
it's Superman complex.
Right, exactly.
You know, why would I read a Superman comic book when I know he's going to live?
Yeah, and so I think they think it raises the stakes to have them have super duper powers, but in some ways it doesn't. I mean, in some ways it almost makes it seem like luck when the good guys win, you know. That was my observation.
It was good. It was very good use of the phrase super duper.
Super duper. Yeah. We don't use that enough, Joe.
Yeah. I didn't super duper graduate law school.
But. No, I just super graduated. Is that it?
All right, I'm all done. Oh, yeah, okay. You can ask Allison. She thought of this. Yeah.
What do you think of Dracula?
I really liked this one. I hadn't ever seen this version.
Yeah.
But Dracula is, I think, my favorite classic horror monster. Like Bela Lugosi is my favorite pompous asshole I think ever.
Mm-hmm.
So this was
that
fun.
He is.
Oh yeah. I also work as a tour guide at Universal, and I love to like rag on him and tell stories about how full of himself he is. So that's like my favorite lore.
Oh, nice.
But this Dracula was very fun. I agree with you about the castle. This, I think, is my favorite version of the castle.
Yeah, yeah.
I also loved all of the medical advice with the ladies when they were coming down with, vampirism.
Yeah.
I thought it was hilarious. You know, a good glass of port wine will just perk them right up. Mm-hmm. I wish that was what they told me when I went to the doctor.
Yeah.
They do the same thing for the, after he does the blood transfusion.
Yeah. Right. He's like,
the doctor recommends, he needs plenty of fluids, tea and coffee, but best of which would be a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After a blood transfusion. Yeah.
Makes total sense.
Oh yeah.
I also,
well, they're both red liquids.
Joe, you don't have a medical degree, okay?
I didn't super duper graduate medical school.
Yeah.
But also in The Vampire Lovers, when they ask her if she wants red or white, she's like, "Oh, obviously red." So I'm like, "Are we equating red wine to blood now?" Like,
yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also love when they're in the graveyard with the small child. And they're like, "Oh, let's go do this now in the middle of the night, whereas we could wait a couple hours, get the child out of here.
Right.
Then we'll know for a fact this is where he'll be."
Yeah.
That'd be too easy.
Yeah.
The stunts I thought were entertaining.
Yeah.
Comical.
Yeah. Very, very much so. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I thought that Christopher Lee with the bloody eyes look was pretty creepy. There was one shot in particular where it kind of zooms in on his face and he's got blood coming out of his eyes or whatever, and his mouth. And I thought it was, you know, kind of a creepy image. And Christopher Lee, I think, is a really good Dracula as well. He's more of the gentleman Dracula, and the man about town. Kind of Dracula, I guess, but you know, he's certainly not a decrepit old guy in a castle. Like, the castle's in good shape. He obviously has help and he's not eating them constantly. So, you know, he's, or I don't know how it keeps maintained, but it's pretty good. And you know, it's the cape, you know, but he's tall. He's an imposing figure. It's
hard to pull it off, but he does it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you know, the shot where he's walking through the window of Lucy's bedroom, that,
yeah, yes,
that's what I expect from Dracula.
Right. Yeah. And such a great gothic look. It's just like there's just some great shots. The movie that we didn't watch this time was the Frankenstein one from Hammer Horror, which is also a really good one. And that one is probably my favorite Hammer movie of all time. And it has some spectacular footage, and it's all on sets like this for the most part, but it just looks so good. They really were meticulous. I wouldn't be surprised if they use some of the same sets for this or change things around or whatever, but yeah, I really love it. And this kind of thing with the, you know, the legend of the vampire and everything, I enjoy these old vampire movies a lot. So I think I enjoy them more than modern vampire movies in general.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that is this one. This was the pick for this week. So, Joe, this is your pick next time. So what do you have in store for us?
We're doing art films. We're doing actually art horror.
Art horror.
Which is, like,
Terrifier?
Art horror often combines brutality with the stereotypical beauty. Like Suspiria would be a good example of one that we're not going to be watching that would fit into that category. Yeah. Where you've got, in the arts, you have ballet.
Yeah.
Mixed with horror. So, but
love
we're
it.
Not watching that one. We're going to watch three others.
Okay.
First of which, from 2016, we're going to watch The Neon Demon.
Oh, yeah. This is one that I had thought about picking a couple times, and I didn't.
And that's on Prime and Freevee.
Okay.
Next, we're going to watch Melancholia.
Uh-huh.
From 2011.
Yeah, that one's Lars von Trier, or is it?
Yeah, it's Lars von Trier. And that is on Netflix and Prime.
Okay.
And the whole reason we're doing this is because I finally found an excuse that we could watch The Cell from 2000,
okay,
which you're going to have to rent.
Okay.
But I will tell you this. I said, screw it. And I just bought the damn thing because I will watch it more than once.
Oh.
So that's it. Neon Demon, Melancholia, and The Cell.
All right.
We'll see how that goes.
And next time we will have a special guest, And that is Mr. Mark Biscotti is returning for an episode to watch these movies with us. So he's
special in all senses of the word.
Special for sure. Yes. But he I guess he saw how popular we are and how much our audience is growing. And he's like, I need to cash in on that and to join him for an episode. So Mark will be back for
he wants his residual check.
Yeah, it's a total coincidence that he saw that. But he said he wanted to do an episode, so we're bringing him back, and hopefully he doesn't ruin what we got going. Now, can you imagine? Can you imagine the audience completely leaves again?
Wow, you better hope he doesn't listen to this episode. He won't be on the next one.
No, that's fine.
Oh, Mark, we kid.
Yeah, we kid. Mark, we kid.
Hey, by the way, it's Kane Hodder's birthday.
Oh.
Today. Oh. He turned 70.
Hello, Mr. Jason.
Yeah.
All right.
Still swinging.
So, Allison, it was great having you on the show. And
thank you so much.
Yeah. So, do you have any acting gigs coming up or anything you want to plug? Or are you just plugging away writing and stuff?
Definitely follow Clearly Thriving. Not a horror podcast, but maybe you need to decompress a little bit. Uh-huh. I just today got pinned for a movie that'll be filming this summer.
Nice.
So that'll be fun.
Excellent.
Yeah. And I have one that's making the rounds at festivals right now.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
Nice. Any horror Wonderful. Involved or?
Not yet. Okay. Every time I have a meeting with my people, I'm like, fam.
Yeah.
Cover me in blood. Let's get this done.
Well, yeah. I sent you a short that I wrote and that Jimmy and I are talking about a lot. And so hopefully if we can get funding for that, I think you'd be perfect for that.
I did love that script. I thought that was very clever.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. So but that one is going to not be one that we can just do ourselves. It's going to require some money. And I would like an actual cinematographer to run the camera and everything and actually do it. Even maybe have somebody else direct it. I don't know, but it'll take some money. So we're trying to figure that out. So.
Yeah. Well, you know where to find me.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So we'd love to have you back sometime. So, please keep us in mind and we'll be in touch, especially if you have any ideas for picks, let us know. And we'd love to have you back anytime.
Yeah, so. For sure. Well, Neon Demon is one of my favorites. You guys should have fun next week.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, this is what
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't either. And I've been saving them because I wanted to do that one. And what was it? Melancholy. Both of those were ones that I wanted to do for picks, but for whatever reason, I think they weren't available or whatever. And I had something else and they just got shifted out. So I'm looking forward to seeing both of those.
Yeah, Neon Demon is very fun cinematically.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Yeah. I think the other, Melancholia, is too. So, Neon Demon, who directed Neon Demon?
Nicholas Winding.
Oh, okay.
Reffin.
Yeah, I don't know that. Yeah. So. All right. Well, go to www.cinescarehorror.com and check out our merchandise. We've got t-shirts. We've got all kinds of stuff on there. And also check out my books. Devil's Glen has a new book cover. So check it out on Barnes & Noble or Amazon or wherever you get books. And I guess that's it. Oh, also, there's a new the audiobook is available as well for Devil's Glen that was directed by a guy that was a guest a month or so ago, Derek Austin. And so check it out. It's on Audible as we speak. So, all right. I guess we will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us.
There's a shark.
Little pig, let's come in.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
You're so senseless,